Hello and welcome to the Unmissables podcast number 45. Yes, 45. Unbelievably, we have reached almost 50 of these podcasts, which some would say is the world's foremost trawl through popular culture in the podcast form.
We've yet to find anyone who doesn't call it that.
That's true. The voice of Kay Ribeiro.
Hi.
I'm Boyd Hilton. And this is the voice of Steph Seelan.
Hi, everyone.
Each week, we look through mostly television, but today we're doing a film and we review it in depth. And we also chat about stuff we've been reading, watching, listening to as well on a weekly basis. Mm-hmm. The in-depth meaty reviews this week will be of Marcella Series 2, starring Anna Friel, returning to ITV. I'm banging the table because it's such a big deal. This was one of their biggest drama hits of recent years, Steph.
I know.
And it's back for a new 8-part series next Monday, the 19th of February. We're also reviewing Steven Soderbergh's Mosaic. Yes, he of Sex, Lies and Videotape, Magic Mike, Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12, Ocean's 13, and others, has directed a 6-part crime drama mystery thriller.
Why has he gone into TV?
Well,
he's
already done The Nick. Do you know The Nick, which is that kind of period drama set in a hospital?
That rings a bell. Yeah,
he co-created and directed a lot of that, if not all of it, I think.
Who was in that?
It had Nick people Berry. In it. Yeah.
Kate Beckinsale's ex. Who is he? What is his name? Oh. Curly head. Michael Sheen.
Yeah.
Was he in it?
Maybe or maybe not. I think you might be confusing that with
something
else.
I mean, it can only be maybe or maybe not. Yeah. Can't it? No, he was in
and
the sex thing.
And we are the authorities.
Yeah, he was in the sex thing.
He was in, what is it called? The Master of Sex.
Master of Sex thing, yeah.
It's a Google.
This was different. The Nick was different. It was good. It was hardcore, very, very gory medical scenes in it. But it was good. But this is, I would describe this as an event. This is a 6-part drama event directed by Steven Soderbergh. And in our occasional series, a fairly regular series of Oscar-worthy, Oscar-nominated films, we're looking at Lady Bird.
Lady Bird.
Which I thought was called Love Bird and spent a lot of time Googling the duration of Love Bird.
Yeah. Love Bird. Oh, I bet that's some sort of... I bet there is a Love Bird and it's a bit of like a saucy
some kind
porn.
Of weird stuff came up.
This is not saucy porn. This is Greta Gerwig, indie queen Greta Gerwig's directorial debut. It stars Saoirse Ronan and it's been nominated for 5 Academy Awards.
Boyd, I really wanted to be the one to say that the way you pronounce it is Saoirse, and you've taken that away from me now.
Well, I mean...
But Steph, we'll do a little rewind. You can do the Oscar theme tune.
Yeah.
It's an Oscar film.
Is it an Oscar film?
It's an Oscar film, yeah.
Ding! Thanks, Kay.
Which counts as a theme tune, but we'll have it.
That's
we'll
true. It. Sorry. It's a noise.
Saoirse Ronan.
Can I just say about The Nick? Okay, so The Nick, did star Clive Owen and the staff of fictionalised version of Knickerbocker Hospital.
Mm. Sounds fun.
Also known as The Nick, in New York during the early 20th century.
Yeah, there you go. Clive Owen. He's good. He's good, isn't it? Yeah, but I think this is even more exciting. Foray into television drama from Soderbergh. Before we get to all that, though... It's that time where we just talk about what other stuff we've seen in the week or other stuff coming up, whatever, or listening to, or, you know, podcasting, all kinds of options. And as ever, in the format we're sticking to, I ask Steph first what she has been looking at.
And I would like to congratulate myself with a pat on the back. That's me giving myself that. For this being my third week of not watching anything on Netflix.
Blimey.
Oh, that is good.
Yeah. Good, isn't it?
That is remarkable, because up until 3 weeks ago, every single week it was stuff you'd watch on Netflix, usually true crime stuff.
And okay, well, it's all true
crime.
She
hasn't given up true crime, boys.
Let's not
be crazy.
Let's not go mad. Okay, so I'm listening to a podcast which is horrendous. It's called Atlanta Monster.
Oh, God.
Oh, it's brilliant. 5 parts so far, okay. It's about... Okay, this is not... You should probably leave. Basically, in Atlanta, there were lots of children that went missing, okay? And, yeah, it's horrible. I won't give too much away because you have to listen to the podcast. And basically, they ended up pinning these murders of all of these children. There was, like, 27. There was up to 29 children that went missing, okay? This was, like, 40 years ago. And they pinned the murder on this guy called Wayne Williams.
But now
there's questions about whether he's guilty. And that's what this is about. It's about the lead up to... getting Wayne Williams and then whether he's really guilty or not.
What do you think?
I've got to say, I think no. Oh, now I think he's a bit of a nasty bastard.
I think it's got to be no, otherwise what would be the point of the podcast? Like,
that is such a good point.
Maybe that's the ultimate twist, though.
That would
it
be a
leads
good twist.
You down the golden path of thinking, oh, this is about a gross miscarriage of justice. In the end, it's not.
Yeah.
That'd be a great twist.
Look, put it this way, okay? The reason they think it was Wayne Williams, okay, is because they found him in the middle of the night going over a bridge, dumping something into the river, and they'd discovered that the bodies that were turning up in rivers could only be being thrown off the middle of the river. And he said at 2 a.m. that he was out trying to find the house of someone who he was going to see, had an appointment with the next day. And his job was a child talent scout. So he'd basically just drive around saying to children, well, I can make you famous. I know. So it's kind of like you can see why.
Mm. I've got to admit, it's not looking good for Wayne, is it?
But Wayne talks to us from prison and he seems fine. He's still trying to put together a band, ironically.
Is it?
From prison, yeah, and managing people in prison. Anyway, I feel like I haven't sold this quite in the way I wanted to, but it's very good.
No, I'm intrigued.
5 episodes so far.
What's it called again?
Atlanta Monster.
Okay.
It's very good.
Catchy title.
It is It is catchy. Monster is a good word, isn't it? I also watched...
like Loch Ness.
I know.
It's a sequel.
When is it? Like Monsters... Yeah, everything with Monster in is good, actually.
Monsters, Inc.
Monster Munch.
Pickled onion all the way.
Beef, come on.
Mm. No. Oof.
What do you mean? Gross.
What's your favourite out of the two? Come on,
pickle,
settle this.
Pickle thing, yeah.
Pickle. Yeah, pickle thing. Pickled onion.
Oh, I do love it. Pickled onion probably is my favourite, but I do like beef.
Okay.
Anyway. Oh, God, did you watch that awful Jamie Bulger documentary?
No.
No, oh, I need to catch up on it, though, because I was obsessed with that case.
I think, isn't there one on Channel 4 and one on ITV? I think the one on Channel 4, Kelvin McKenzie, in it, which means it cannot be watched.
I knew you were going to say that, because I know you hate Kelvin McKenzie. And you know what? Honestly, I hate Kelvin McKenzie, too. Yeah. And that is the, you know, obviously the whole thing is horrendous. So, yeah, this is, it was Channel 4, the one that
the
I watched.
The one with Kelvin McKenzie. Yeah.
There is an ITV one as well, isn't there?
Is there? Oh, God, because obviously it's coming up to a certain amount of years. It's just, it was horrendous, but it's kind of, it's just so interesting. The way that they posed this whole thing was like, was justice done with what happened to them? And oh my God, you hear the confession tapes.
What in
of
terms
these
of
boys.
Should they have been in prison for as long as they have been?
No, were they treated correctly at the time? Right. So you hear, so you've got both of their lawyers talking and them saying, and you hear extracts of them being interviewed and it's really harrowing.
I'm going to have to watch that because I was obsessed with that case.
It's kind of our time, isn't it? That we were like, that was the huge thing when we were younger. So yeah, I know what you mean, Boyd. Kelvin McKenzie, I have to say, you can never watch it because he is thoroughly irritating. But
well, more than that, it's a whole thing about, you know.
It is horrible.
It's a whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, it's
horrible.
Well,
can you allude to what the thing is? Otherwise, we
He doesn't like stuff like that. It's not nice. Go on.
Well, it's all to do with Hillsborough. I mean, you know, he was responsible. He was the editor when The Sun had the infamous, disgusting front page blaming the victims for Hillsborough.
Yeah.
And it took him about 25 years, I think, to apologise. And Liverpool still, they boycotted The Sun in Liverpool still to this day. And, of course, that happened.
Yeah,
in Liverpool. So the whole thing was just wrong. I don't know why he was on it. It was a big mistake by Channel 4. Everyone's furious about it.
He does try and make out that he is in some way responsible for Michael Howard changing their sentence from 8 to 15.
Yeah.
And
like, I mean, he may
8
be,
to 15 years. Yeah. No, I don't think he is. No. There was a huge petition. It wasn't Kelvin McKenzie.
Okay.
Anyway, it's very fascinating. James Bulger John has just shown me Bulger Doc Axe, James Bulger documentary, The Bulger Killers, removed from 4OD by Channel 4 after backlash. Okay, forget everything I just said. You can't watch it.
There you go.
That's
I feel like we have watched it because you described it so well,
live.
Steph.
Yeah, I think there was a big, huge outcry on social media about it, and I think they really screwed up because anyone with any sense would know that Liverpool deeply resents him and they shouldn't have had him involved.
He's the worst thing.
So that's the reason. Are you saying that's the reason why it's been taken down?
Well, I think so.
He didn't actually need to be on it. I don't know why.
No,
it was
we
very
didn't,
interesting
exactly
with
didn't
the lawyers. He didn't need to be on it. Anyway. You can't watch it anyway. Now, I don't know. I've been watching some what I like to call live TV.
Oh God. But just to clarify, this isn't actual live TV. This is just normal terrestrial TV.
TV that's on a Monday, okay? And, right, I don't...
just Monday.
That's your own definition of live TV, by the way.
Listen, right, I've become obsessed with this show. Right, you know anything about me? I do not believe in diets. I don't believe in dieting. I think you should just eat what you want, whenever you want. But there's this show which is just gripping called How to Lose Weight Well. You know, with that like sexy doctor, his name's, he's got a twin brother. Oh, I've forgotten his name. He's got a really posh name.
Okay.
Anyway, there's a show, it's 1 hour on a Monday and basically
Channel
it takes
four,
three.
I think.
Yeah, Channel 4. It takes three types of people who want to lose weight. People who want to lose weight in like 4 days, people who want to lose weight in 6 weeks, and some people who want to lose weight in 3 months. And it puts them on all these different types of diet. it's honestly gripping. And then in it, he's always like debunking things. Like this week he did watches, GPS watches, fitness tracker things. Are they good or not? Honestly, I can't stop watching this show. It's brilliant. I know it sounds unusual.
I have to say, you're the least likely person to watch this show.
It's really, I think it's the personal
different
stories
world.
Of
you
the
just
people.
Fancy the doctor, don't you?
Yeah, first I think it's part of that. But also, like, I love to know, like, some of the people, like, they get so emotional when they lose the weight. Like, they're, like, people are getting married. And it's really nice. I like the journey.
You like following their journey.
It's the journey.
People are getting married, okay?
Yeah, but it's really nice. They're like, I really want to lose
how to lose weight
stone.
And get married.
It's really nice. And, like, people are doing, like, races for charity. It's just lovely. Oh. Anyway, so that's what I've been watching.
Wow.
Nothing on Netflix.
I think you've bowled us over. Yeah,
as always.
It's a bowl over.
Kay, have you been watching stuff not to do with grim true crime?
Yes.
I mean, you can watch stuff to do with grim
no,
true crime.
No, you know
if you
that's
want,
not
but
for
I leave
me.
It
that's
entirely
not my bag.
Up to you.
I leave that down. I'll leave that for Steph.
What is in your bag?
I'll tell you what is really in my bag right now: the trauma final.
Oh, yeah.
Episode, the finale. Yeah, the final episode. The final.
The trauma final sounds like
it's a football match as well. Like
oh, Boyd, you still need to tell me what happens when we get out of here. Can you tell me what happens?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I have to watch.
So, Boyd, you've seen it, haven't you?
Yes.
Pogs, it's on tomorrow, I think, Wednesday.
People
it's
on the ground.
This is John Sims' new drama.
With Adrian Lester.
That we reviewed last week.
Yeah,
but what if you just decided to tune in now? Because you're like,
no,
that
no, I'm just adding to the general background information.
All right.
Well, last week we discussed it, and Steph had said she found it so tense and traumatic, she wasn't going to watch any more. But Boyd and I said, it is really good, which Steph agreed with, and I said I'd continue till the end. It is. So last week, Boyd was saying that there's this new kind of like culture among people to feel like everyone's just professionally disappointed with endings. And I have to say, I wasn't at all. There were a couple of minor things that if I was being picky, but if not, just on balance, it was just, I think, the perfect ending to it. There's so it's between John Sim and Adrian Lester,
the doctor,
and John Sim's son died in hospital during an operation that Adrian Lester was doing. He's fixated on the fact that he thinks that Adrian Lester is responsible for it, and you've been getting goosebumps.
It's making me feel tense now.
Well, there's an outdoor confrontation in the finale that is absolutely exceptional. Like, you go through such a
exceptional. I don't even think you've used that word on this podcast.
It was so good. I discussed this with Boyd because it just, you know, by the end of it, you've got such a thorough understanding of both their perspectives. Like, before, I could only see it from one of theirs. And then by the end of it, I was like, no, I completely see it. And it just, afterwards, it just makes you think deeply about the things they discussed. Well, for me, it resonated with me.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So that was the first thing.
I'm very glad you liked it because I thought it was brilliant as well, yeah.
It's so good. It's a must watch.
So it's an object lesson now to do a self-contained, because it's only three parts. It could have been, you know, ITV could say, no, we want it. You stretch it out to 5, 6, 7, 8. They're showing it over consecutive nights. So it's really, like, if you watch it in that way, I think it's really satisfying because it's a very intense, I mean, it's so intense you can barely talk about it.
I can't
Steph.
But do you know
so
what, you
really
said it was like,
done,
you know, over the three nights, you know, to make it event TV. And at the time I was like, what's he talking about? But now I totally see it. It has made it into, a real
good
talking point. Right, so that's first thing.
Fiji.
Spiral, BBC Four.
I've heard about this. God. Someone told me that I'd really like this.
What is
it about?
Excellent French police drama. Right, it's a foreign drama. It's a read for you. You've got to read it, Steph.
Mark that down.
And I'm sure a lot of the pogs have already been watching it because we're on the sixth series of it.
Oh,
but it doesn't matter because it's self-contained. Each series is self-contained. You can watch it.
So it hasn't got the same detectives in it.
Yeah, it has.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, but it doesn't matter. I mean,
but is it like the tunnel where you get more out of it if you go and watch it from?
I mean, I'm going to go back and watch it, but it's on your preferred streaming network of Netflix.
Oh,
so go back to the beginning.
Right. Okay, well,
right.
Yes,
stars Caroline Proust and Thierry Godard, and it's an excellent police drama. And this season, they are looking into a local gang and police corruption, and it is just brilliant. I'm so happy I discovered it. So, Pogs, if you like a foreign drama, get on that. It's on BBC iPlayer.
Do you like that, Boyd? Do you read it?
No, but I think it's everyone. I think my mum loves it.
Right. Well, there you go.
So
you know your mum.
My mum is she watches the BBC 4 live Saturday night.
Live, does she?
Yeah, transmission of all of these subtitled
reading
shows.
Foreign dramas.
Yeah. And they most almost all of them are really really good. And she really likes this one, yeah. And so, yeah.
Let's not forget my Spanish drama that was on there.
But you can carry on watching it live on a Saturday. Oh, yeah, of course. What was that called again? Should You Really Be Friends or something like that?
Wasn't I Know Who You Are.
I Know Who You Are.
Should You Really Be Friends?
I knew it was like a long title.
Where did that come from?
Anyway, it's out live on Saturday nights on BBC Four, Spiral, and catch up on the iPlayer. Just
so,
saying.
Series 1 to 6 available on the Flix?
Yeah.
Okay.
Actually, 6 might not be it because it's just like about 1 to 5. Right. Next two things, very quickly. Now, I've just finished watching the first episode of Save Me, which is on Sky Atlantic. I'm not going to discuss it in full because I know it's going to be on... you're going to be reviewing it.
We're reviewing it next week, Kay.
When I won't be here.
No spoilers. Just don't be selfish. Just because you're away.
I just have to talk about it a little bit.
Sunning yourself in bloody India.
Kay, what's the other thing? I think you should not say anything about Save
No, I'm just going to say it's from the makers of Line of Duty. It's written by Lenny James.
She can't be stopped. She can't be
stopped. Starring Saran Jones. Focus on what I'm saying, Pogs. And it's about the abduction of a little girl. And it is fantastic. So make sure you tune in to the podcast next week.
Yep. That's enough.
Stop showing off.
Okay, fine. I interviewed Lenny and Saran as well. I mean, listen, I'm just saying.
It's name a double
drop.
Show
It's
off.
A name drop.
Oh, okay, I know.
I'm
sorry, I was being
I'm
crass.
The only one who can do that.
Yeah, we're going to start calling you Boydetta. Outrageous.
And the last thing, and I'm just telling this to make you laugh. I watched Shirley Valentine.
Oh, my God. What? Why?
The 1989 film. Yes, I watched it.
You have
it.
Made us laugh.
Yeah, because...
Julie Walters, Michael Caine. Oh, no.
No. Pauline Collins.
Tom Conti. I'm confusing it with the other...
you were being Snooty McGooty yes. and you got caught out.
Yeah. What are you confusing it with?
The other May to December romance, whatever it's called, with Julie Walters and Michael Caine. Educating Rita.
I love it.
Which is much better.
I love it. I think it's the same. Rita.
No, it's not better.
Have yeah, you seen Educating Rita?
Shirley Valentine is excellent.
Educating Rita is a natural next step for you after Shirley Valentine.
Honestly, it's so good. Right, Pauline Collins plays this. You've seen it, obviously,
oh,
right?
Of course.
Any folks who haven't, it disgruntled, put upon housewife what? Who goes to Greece on a brilliant holiday and has a holiday romance with Tom Conti.
Kate, why?
And why would
yeah,
are
why?
You?
Why did you suddenly watch it?
Why not?
Why are you insistent on trying to make people watch films that are 35 years old and Watercolour Challenge?
Steph, these are classic films. Why can't you watch them after a long time? Not Boys. Everything's about Netflix. New films.
Oh, I've got to just watch this thing on Netflix. Here, it's just dropped.
Yeah, as I thought, it's written by the same guy, Willie Russell, who wrote Educating Rita. That's okay, partly why fine. I got confused.
Okay, yeah. We accept
Please
that.
Please excuse me, but Educating Rita is much
I'm
better.
Just here representing old things.
No. It's great.
That have been on.
Now then,
have you been watching?
You may have abandoned the Netflix, Steph, but I haven't.
Oh.
Yeah. And you know what happened on Sunday night? Last Sunday but one, or if you like.
If you yeah.
Super Bowl Sunday, basically.
Super Bowl Sunday.
What happened? Great cultural moment, or a very interesting cultural moment, where if you're watching the Super Bowl in the United States of America particularly, there's suddenly a trailer for this film, The Cloverfield Paradox, which has been long, like, rumoured to be like, the third in the Cloverfield franchise. It's gone through a lot of title changes. It was originally called something about, something about particle, God particle.
Let's Just Be Friends thing that you said.
No,
earlier.
People didn't know it was going to be part of the Cloverfield thing, which is the same thing happened with the second one. They didn't, but that wasn't revealed that it was going to be part of the Cloverfield franchise until late in the day. It was going to be released in April in cinemas, and it was put back, and then everyone was like confused. And then suddenly, everyone realized while they're watching the Super Bowl that Netflix was putting it out as soon as the Super Bowl finished on a worldwide basis, so you can watch it there and then on your Netflix
nice one,
and
Netflix.
Television. Which on one level, not in cinemas at all.
Must be rubbish then.
Well, this is the interesting thing. Is it or isn't it rubbish? Because obviously immediately speculation was, oh, it's got to be rubbish because that's why Paramount, who made it.
Maybe it's a stunt.
A stunt? Mm. Because obviously they get a huge amount of publicity for it. And it is, it's quite, quite a big budget science fiction thing, part of that franchise. But I've watched it.
And?
It's stunt or rubbish?
It's
rubbish.
Stunt.
Diabolical.
Oh, I knew it.
Damn
and
it.
I'm a big fan of the previous Cloverfield films, particularly the second one.
The second one's good with John Goodman.
Yeah, because it's really claustrophobic. Set. It's basically like someone ends up waking up in this claustrophobic basement, and John Goodman is this
it's
psychopathic.
A horror. It's, really
it's a horror.
Brilliant.
And then at the end, there's the with spoiler alert. There's the Cloverfield link, not right at the end.
Right at the end.
This is set up on a spaceship. And it's kind of like it's set in a world where the Earth is running out of natural resources. So they've gone on this spaceship to try and solve this big problem somehow, this crew of this spaceship, kind of alien style, you know. And there's a whole explanation, literally explanation in the first 5 minutes when there's some kind of transmission from Earth to them saying, oh, because of this particle we've been testing to try and help the situation with energy back on Earth, your entire reality is going to be twisted and warped.
I'm out.
And so from that point, anything can happen in this film because there's a warp in the reality.
This sounds like Altered Carbon.
I was just about to say that.
It's not like Altered Carbon. It's kind of like Alien meets... you know all these Event Horizon? Have you seen Event Horizon, which is a really good film?
Yeah, that is a good film. And also Alien's a really good film, so it makes it sound like it's going to be
like
good.
It's like all those, but not good.
Right.
It's like those, but terrible.
So nothing like those.
And it's got a really good cast. David Oyelowo's in it. Guga and Bartha Raw's in it from Black Mirror.
Yeah.
Great actress.
So...
Chris O'Dowd is in it.
Oh, come on, Chris.
I know.
Chris is brilliant.
It's an absolute mess. At one point, slight spoiler alert, but then again...
It's diabolical.
It's just a thing that happens in the middle of it. Chris O'Dowd... This is the kind of thing that happens in this film.
Oh, God.
Chris O'Dowd's arm gets eaten by the wall of the spaceship. It gets lopped off. He loses his arm, and then his arm starts crawling around of its own accord. And this is not played for laughs. So Chris O'Dowd's standing there. No, Chris O'Dowd's standing there. I mean,
he's
trying to fix something on the wall because he's like the engineer guy,
right?
And he's kind of suddenly the wall attacks him.
What kind of wall is it?
The wall of the spaceship, like literally a wall of the spaceship.
So like if you were in a plane and you leaned
the side
over.
Of the, God, side
this
of the
is
plane.
Like Shirley Valentine talking to the wall.
Yeah. And previous to that, by the way, a character's discovered who's been kind of buried in the wall. Funnily enough, which is in one of the things we're reviewing today. So there's a lot of wall-based action. Oh. But anyway, he's got the severed limb running around doing its own thing. And Chris O'Dowd is kind of trying to be as wry as he can be within the context, but you're supposed to be scared by the arm
Is the
crawling around.
The socket bleeding? Like what's happening?
The socket's just like it's a clean cut. So you see like the
try and wrestle to get his arm back?
He tries to get it back, yeah, but to no avail. Then the Cloverfield connection. Honestly, because you're all a bit like the second one, you're like, where is the Cloverfield connection? Because the original Cloverfield film was of course a monster movie, really, shot in that found footage style. And so you're always wondering, how is this... Honestly, some of the dialogue to explain the connection is so lame and obviously shoehorned in at the last minute.
This sounds ludicrous.
That it's clearly a complete mess that's gone horribly wrong, and they've tried to kind of make it make sense. There's lots of... You know, a film has been subject to... It's all gone horribly wrong in the filming of it and have to try and put it together in the edit. When key moments of dialogue are off screen, you don't see it, and they're... Something's being explained to
What's that you say?
Yeah. Oh, yes, remember that thing in Cloverfield?
It's
a bit like that. So it is terrible. And what I think the interesting thing about it is that Netflix has got to be careful because in a way, as soon as you see a film... which is expected, you'd expect to be in cinemas, arrive on Netflix exclusively, I think you're going to feel, oh, it's going to be a bit shit. But of course, we did Okja, which was great.
Fantastic. So five stars.
I think they've got to be still a bit, the quality control, maybe, it for me, has got to be.
You don't want it to become a dumping ground.
No,
but
did they think,
oh, this is just such a mess, let's just try and dazzle them with
smoke and mirrors
and go, oh, you can see it now.
I think that's exactly what they did.
And some people go, oh, that's so exciting.
That is a really risky strategy, though, because you've actually made more people who probably wouldn't watch it go, yeah, God.
Yeah.
Netflix.
Totally. Yeah.
It's a cock up.
It's a shame. But, you know, if you want to watch it for yourself, The Cloverfield Paradox is now available on the Netflix.
It'll be funny. If you want to watch it after that, you need your head testing.
You do.
You said it was diabolical.
It is diabolical. I was really looking forward to it because I love a spaceship based. Sunshine, that film? Good.
That's great. Danny Boyle. Film, Sunshine,
it's like a bit of all that mixed together with terribleness.
Cillian Murphy.
Yeah.
Cillian Murphy.
Anyway, let's move on to the meat.
Reviews, news.
Nope. We're doing...
Hold on a minute. Also, we haven't talked about Kiri.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do Kiri first. I'll beep, beep, reverse from reviews, news.
Quick Kiri up song.
Beep, beep, beep. Right. Kiri. Okay. Can I just say what I thought?
Of course.
Right.
Always.
Please.
Listen,
go.
Here's my problem with it. I don't mind a little bit left to the imagination. You know, we were talking last week a bit about people who like conventional endings. I mean, I definitely am one of those people.
We should say this bit. We're going to have spoilers now, right?
Go make up a theory. Just go. Just stop.
Steady.
It. Stop listening.
Just watch. Make sure you've watched all four episodes of Kiri.
Okay.
And then you can happily listen. If you haven't yet had time to watch the finale of Kiri or whatever, then come back to us in about 5 minutes' time.
Yeah.
I'm saying.
Three, two, one, right. Kiri. I just it really aggravated me that not even, there wasn't a seed of anything being tied up. So all I needed to make me happier with this is that some, like, Sarah Lancashire's character to, like, say out loud, oh, yeah, but I know that she, that What's-a-Chops the mum was behind me. I needed some of those things to look, like, some of those loose ends to look like they were going to get tied up. So the son just goes off to...
What do you mean she was
behind
you?
We watched the final episode.
Yeah.
Hold on.
Are you sure?
To be fair, yeah. Are you sure? I think before, like, there's an explanation of how Kiri got killed.
Yes.
Right? That's that's a pretty big loose end tied.
No, that's fine. But I, what I mean is I need to know that the perpetrator of the crime is very close to being put in jail.
Oh.
And the right person is
you've
difference.
Decided your own thing. It's your own loose end hasn't been tied. But that's the big loose end of who did it, that's tied.
Yeah. No. The loose end is now, like, that the person who is in, the dad is freed and the other dad is quite rightly
but
put in jail.
But that is, I quite like that in a way because that is how, that's how it goes. The
it's making a point,
sometimes.
Isn't it? No, yes, it's making
it
a point
true,
about
though.
The crumbling
this,
of the cookie.
People are being
racist
tried.
Cookie
I know,
crumbling.
But on TV, I want the cookie to look like it's coming back. It's
well,
because
life's
it has to
not
represent
like that.
Life,
yeah,
actually.
Exactly,
but
yeah.
I, do you know what I thought, though, which I had a bigger problem with? So the dad did it, and we know that now.
Yeah.
It's like... You're going to say spoiler alert, aren't you? But, like, I just feel like it was so quickly brushed under the carpet. Like, he got really angry at the son, and that was to, like, exemplify that he has these rage issues. And then that was it. That's all the explanation you kind of really got for...
The other thing that really annoyed me is that that nasty mum, she never got her comeuppance. It was like, I really wanted Sarah Lancashire to say, you've put me through hell, you've said all these terrible things about me, and all along, she was the person who she was in danger with is actually your husband. That's what annoyed me.
But Sarah Lancashire didn't know that.
But there was no... That's what I mean. I wanted her to know. There was no kind of moment where... Like, she should have been completely... Like, she should have been really happy at the end of that. I didn't want Sarah Lancashire to, like, just be happy that her dog had 6 months to live. That really was distressing to me. It wasn't...
But compare it to... I hear what you're saying, but let me interrupt. Sorry.
Please
sorry
do.
For interrupting. Remember this writer, Jack Thorne... did a similar thing with National Treasure, right? So you knew what the whole thing is or is not he responsible? Is he a child abuser?
Yeah,
right?
But you know.
So that was resolved.
Yeah, but you
but
then she leaves him, so you know he's getting his comeuppance.
Come on,
at
let
the
him
end
have
of
it.
That.
Let him have
you don't know fully if he's going to get his comeuppance. It's left so that he has to live with this, what he's done. But in this, you know, the father has to live with what he's done. The wife, remember the wife goes off into the street, doesn't she? And she's kind of like going crazy, you know. Yeah. I think there's a lot of the son...
Yeah, the son's not exactly an easy ride.
I think you're left with the distinct impression, as you would in real life, that this has destroyed all these lives, this incident. And the main topic has been solved as to who did it and how. You know, it's partly an accident, which is I thought that was going to happen probably.
I would be so irritated if it was an accident.
But only partly, yeah. And I think, you know, I think that's... For me, anyway,
no,
that was
I
enough.
I need
no?
blame attributed and somebody to be held accountable. That's the thing. No
you
one was
justice.
Held. I need justice. I was not.
I think
happy
I think there's probably a lot of people who agree with you. To be fair, but I thought it was good. And what it did include
irritating.
The absolutely brilliant scene where Sarah Lancashire's daughter, troubled daughter, brought all those people back whose lives,
my God.
Which was one of the great scenes of the year.
That
may
was
well be brilliant.
I was
we
crying.
Were sobbing.
Yeah,
yeah.
Sobbing. It was
you probably
lovely.
Were heartlessly waiting for the crime to be solved.
And it also, let's just, you know, it also had that lovely scene where the vet came out and said,
you
yeah.
See, you care more about the vet and the dog, don't you, than these people's lives have been saved.
That was a lovely scene where she came out right. And the vet and he said, oh no, she said he's dead. He's dead, isn't he?
Yeah.
And he was like, no.
Actually,
I
had a little bit of a
right.
sob to that as well.
Yeah.
It was an emotional rollercoaster.
It wasn't, the ending was not concrete enough
for me. Well, you've made that clear. Okay.
Wasn't.
Satisfied? Dissatisfied?
Medium. I was like...
Medium level of satisfaction.
Yeah, I understand Steph's dissatisfaction.
Thanks, Kay.
But let's just say, if you watch Trauma, you'll be more
yeah,
satisfied with that
more,
ending.
Yeah.
Stop trying to entice me to watch that
watch
stressful
it.
Show.
It's brilliant.
Okay.
Right.
And we're back.
Reviews news.
That worked better this time. Okay, guys, guess what? We've got 100. Oh, what, Steph?
Is that, have we? No, we haven't.
No, we haven't. That would be, that would be
amazing.
Has it
gone from like 65 to 100?
Boys, please do not make that sound like you really don't believe that could ever happen in a million years.
It could happen, but it hasn't happened. And we've now got 67 reviews.
Great.
Boys, we've only got to get how it's many great. More? 23, it's fine.
Yeah, no, 33. Yeah, by April, our first
As
birthday.
I said, we've only got to get 23 more to
the Seelan paradox.
Anyway, quick shout out and thanks to Neil Locke, who says, oh my God, okay, so he started it off by going, okay, highbrow it's not. So I was like,
that is
a great observation.
Do you know what? That should be our tagline, The Unmissables, highbrow it's not.
And then he went on to say, it's a proper romp. He commended our honour chemistry. And he said, basically, you feel like you could spend an hour at the local Cafe Nero with the team chatting about your Saturday night guilty TV pleasure. So I'm thinking live events we should do.
I do like a Cafe Nero.
But a live event in a Cafe Nero would be about the level of audience that we'd get.
Boyd, if you're not going to dream big, what is the point of this?
You're going to get fired from this podcast very soon, okay?
Coffee for one to take away.
Ooh.
Right, swiftly moving on. We had our next review from Mira Jade.
Oh, my friend.
Yes, I believe Steph has been conversing with Mira.
She's my friend who was watching Law and Order.
Oh, yeah.
The Menendez murders. And then we watched the other thing.
Yeah.
Oh. I have to say though, I did, because Kay was staring at me in a really scary way and said, can you ask her to review? So she did review.
Well, Steph just came over, said she'd been having a nice chit chat, which I was obviously very happy with, but I was like, let's see if we can get another review.
Yeah, let's milk this.
Mira said, as a researcher on a popular TV review /reality show,
she's not.
What?
I'm a huge fan of the podcast. I love listening to it on my commute to work. It helps me look ahead at what might be good for the cast on our show, as well as myself to watch. And then she said, thanks for introducing me to the Menendez murders, Steph.
You are welcome.
Derry Girls and the marvellous Mrs. Maisel. Good luck reaching the 100th review.
Oh, she's a super pog.
And finally, we've had a review from someone going by the name of Pog Person. Mm. And they just said, I used to love Boyd's TV reviews on the radio.
Another one of them.
But they then did say, and the addition of Kay and Steph just makes this even better.
Yay, wow. We make you better.
That's a first.
First, outrageous.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Just to say, we are aiming to get these 100 reviews by our first birthday in April. So if you would like to be part of our Pog gang and review us, we'd be very grateful. Just go to iTunes, look up our Missables and pop your review on there.
And what happens when we get the 100?
We're just going to be really pleased.
Yeah. We just celebrate Boyd will buy every single Pog who reviewed us a cake.
Don't say something like that.
Do you know what? Atlanta Monsters.
This is legally binding.
That's what I'm saying.
Boyd, Atlanta Monsters got 149 reviews. There's only 5 episodes of that.
That's
if we can't get more than
oh my god, now 149
depression from Atlanta Monster.
Yeah, but that, okay, don't sing a depression. No. That's a global phenomenon. This is, you know.
We are too, right?
Yeah. You know what? If we had a true crime element to this podcast, not where we're just reviewing true crime, but if I say I murdered one of you, and then the other one got convicted of it, or say John got convicted of it.
Yeah, let John go to prison.
It was a wrongful conviction. Okay. And then we can make a 6-part dramatic, you know, like speaking that slightly pompous, serious voice that they do, and they narrate these things with.
Yes.
And then it worked, yeah.
So 2018. Who are you
going to kill? February.
Yeah.
Host of podcast, Boyd Hilton.
Yes.
Brutally slaughtered, Stephanie Seeley.
Yay! I knew I was going to be me.
I'm a survivor.
See, we're going to get hundreds of reviews now and hundreds of millions of listeners.
Watch out for that murder, guys. Okay, how about that?
We will do it. If we get 100, that's what we're going
to
do.
If you're willing to be the victim of a true crime.
I am willing to do anything to get 100 views, 100 reviews, okay? So
anyway, let's do some meat.
All right.
Let's eat some meat.
Let's eat some meat.
And we're starting with Marcella.
Marcella.
Kay?
Yes.
This, I believe, is one of your favourite shows of the recent weeks.
Yes, it is.
You watched Marcella series one.
I loved.
You also, did you not take part in a roundtable interview situation with star Anna Friel?
I did interview Anna Friel.
I mean,
thanks
this is all adding up to you being the person who's going to explain what the hell Marcella is.
Sounds that way.
Right. Marcella, if you haven't watched it, it's a police drama starring Anna Friel in the title role of Marcella. And she's a detective and... At the beginning of this series, it opens with her... It's a dramatic opening, actually. She's on the top, the roof of a building, and it's like she's going to jump. We don't know what's going to happen. And then we go back in time 12 days before, and we see that the team, her team, are investigating the murder of a young boy. This boy's found in the cavity of a wall. He's dressed in a school uniform, surrounded by like cuddly toys. And then she rapidly realizes that that boy who's died is the friend of her son. And he had gone missing years before, and this is his this body. And then through the investigation, we get to see all the people that are suspects. So this boy who's found in the wall, the flat next door is that of an aging rock star who seemingly like lost his marbles a bit, probably through drug taking. He is played
Nigel
by
Planer, Nigel of Planer. Young Ones fame.
Yep.
Yes. Neil in the Young Ones.
I knew him from somewhere.
Yes.
Yes.
Great.
Neil. And also his agent's played by Keith Allen. Another legend.
Father of Lily. Oh, legend. God.
All the legends. And also someone else they investigate is a local paedophile played by Peter Sullivan.
He is a right nasty bastard.
NB, total NB, obviously. And yeah, so she investigates. In tandem to this, we get to see, as always, her relationship status. She's currently having a bit of an affairs, maybe too strong a point. She's like sleeping around with her boss. And we see that her ex-husband, who we saw in the first series, is very much moving on with his life. He's come out of rehab and he's having a relationship with his rehab nurse and is about to take it to the next step with her, next level. Mm. And yeah, there's subplots, but I can't be bothered with those, so I'm not going to describe them.
Ooh.
It's not be bothered.
There are subplots, aren't there, Steph? I mean, my first impression of this first episode was...
Sorry, one last thing. I'll say one last thing.
Kate's got a hand up.
Sorry.
She does want to go into one of the subplots after all. She's changed her mind.
Can be bothered.
It's a reverse ferret. What do you want to say now?
This ferret has reversed. It's to say that she has blackouts, fugues.
Yes,
fugues?
Of course.
Fugues.
Fugues. Slash blackouts.
Where she is not in control of herself. She is often violent and she doesn't remember what she's done.
Well, that wasn't the premise of the first series. That she's had, because she has these blackout fugue things.
Yeah.
She could have been involved in a violent crime herself.
I now have my hand
Stave,
up.
Steph's got a hand up. Stave.
Right.
It's like a cross between Steph and Kay. Stave.
That's our new name. Right. I'm going to shock you now. I didn't watch the first series. Here's the reason, okay? I was sick to the back teeth of people going on about that ruddy, bloody Parker coat that she wore.
Steph.
And I was like, I'm not watching this because it's like...
That is so irrational.
I know it sounds irrational.
This is the new
I
Ricky Whittle.
Seen classic that picture Steph. Of her classic in that ceiling. Coat and I was like, I don't want
to see
that.
So she's not allowed to be
green,
warm.
I was like, I do not want to see that green
so hold
Parker
on.
Anymore.
Dystopia, Whittle. These are the things you irrationally hate.
And a frilled Parker coat.
Coats that are coats. Overspoken about.
So Luther, you don't like Luther's coat?
Hold on a minute. Ooh, but what I'm going to say now is, okay, I know I love Luther. Don't you ever say anything like that about me and Idris. Okay? Right. But I realise I made a grave error here because I love this episode so much. And I was like, but my point about saying this is that I don't know anything about Marcella or anything. So I was like, oh God, I sort of didn't want to watch this because I thought, oh God. And I don't understand any of the backstory. So a lot of it was confusing. But I was pleased to see she got a new coat. It's a nice
you know what,
stack.
Steph?
Steph, I've got some breaking
this
news.
This is all
coat.
Addressed by Kay in her interview
in
with
Anna
Frill
with Anna,
in the
it
new
up.
Issue of Heat magazine.
She did say, look, seasonally wise, it didn't make sense to wear the Parker because it's a warmer climb.
I'm glad.
It does come back.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
In the interview, right, in the interview that Kay did, there's a lot of spiel about, you know, all the character and the motivation and the this, that and the other.
But
then suddenly you get to
the
key moment
this is what
where
I mean,
Kay goes,
though.
What about the iconic coat?
But that's what
and then
me
Anna
mad.
Friel in the interview says, no, you idiot. Obviously, I'm not sure she's Kay an idiot, really.
She I feel says, like Boyd is maybe putting words into Anna's mouth right now.
Yeah. And she says, you know, it's shot in a different season. I'm not wearing a winter coat, obviously.
But says, that actually, that's a good point
news.
Because I do wear
coat
it later
news.
On. Though.
But anyway.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes,
I'm just like,
well,
oh,
I don't really
God,
know what you mean,
going
no. Because
to
hold
coat.
A coat
so
against
annoying.
The programme is absolutely
but then everyone was buying
ludicrous.
Those green Parkers and I was like, oh, for God's sake. It just aggravated me. Anyway, I'm a fool. I'm a fool, Pogs, because I really like this. And I was like, but then I feel like, and you can tell me, there are things in this you absolutely do not understand unless you watch the first series. Is that correct? Because I was a bit confused.
I
don't think
so.
No, I don't think
so at all. What were you
confused
about?
Okay, so first I was like, what when she says to her ex-husband, oh, you're out of rehab, I felt like you needed probably to know a bit of that backstory.
No, I think it's fine.
All you need
to
know is been in rehab.
Okay. Then also the situation with her son, is there something eerie with her son?
No.
Okay.
No, because it's all new. Because the fact that the son, what's new is, the fact that the son knew this murder of it, this poor boy.
So he didn't go missing last season?
No. This is a new, and there's an interesting, it's quite helpful interview with the guy who wrote and created it, Hans Rosenfeld.
Oh,
yeah.
Scandi Noir.
He wrote The Bridge. Which, of course, your favourite.
Okay, The Tunnel.
The Tunnel was based on.
Okay.
So he is deeply immersed in the world of Nordic noir, right? And this whole show is kind of structured very much like a lot of the classic Nordic noirs, with a lot of plot strands and a lot of all these different possible people who may or may not be involved and you don't really know how being shown to you in right from the beginning. It's all a bit complicated. But that plot line about the boy, her, Marcella's son, being having a connection to the victim. He came up with that for this new series because he wanted to have a way of her being personally linked to the crimes and all same taking place with the fact she might have been involved in it.
That's
in
what,
the first series.
Okay, and well, the other thing is, you know, she's got this partner. I couldn't quite work out whether he was her equal or whether he was sort of in charge of her.
Boss.
He is her boss. Yeah. Okay, so this is the thing.
And she, in Kay's interview, she describes him as an F-buddy.
I'm not talking about him. I'm talking about the Asian guy that she works with. Is he her equal?
No, he's slightly above her. Yeah, Ray Panthaki. Ray Panthaki.
Yeah, because he seems really annoyed that something she does something that goes a little bit above his head.
Because
she's
basically pillow talk. Pillow talk.
Yeah,
she had told the guy that she's sleeping with, who is both their superiors, information about the case that she hadn't told him, so he's a bit like, come to me first.
She's more than capable of unprofessional behaviour.
Oh my god,
That's what annoys Ray Panthaki about her. Jamie Bamber is the one she's sleeping with, the F-buddy.
The blackouts, are they something that arose from something that happened in the first
I asked her about this.
Yes, indeed.
And she says that, we don't know that.
Don't know.
So Boyd and I, even when we've watched the first series, we don't know that. But Anna said, during the series.
Yes. Have you watched episode two of this series? I've watched episode two. And in episode two, she gets psychological help and they're starting. What's going to happen clearly is they're going to take her back to an incident that would have sparked these blackouts.
Okay. And this really is
another
hand
up question.
There was a reference to her husband having had someone murdered, may or may not have had someone murdered.
That's to do with an old case, but actually that's irrelevant.
Is it irrelevant?
Yeah, don't worry
about it. Don't get hung up on it.
But this is what, if you come to it fresh, then these are the questions.
Just let it flow over you. But I think, because a lot of stuff that we're introduced to, so many different characters. I mean, there's a whole thing going on in the first episode involving this millionaire man who owns a company, Vince, played by Jason Hughes, and his wife, played by Victoria Smurfit. And he is, I have to say, a brilliant stereotype of an evil businessman who's exploiting his workers. And another character is one of his workers who's on, what's it called?
0 hours.
0 hours contract. And there's literally discussion about what zero hours contracts are.
It's like Sports Direct, isn't it?
But it's a very, they're addressing this topical issue, political issue, in a very, I thought, incredibly sledgehammer, clunky manner.
Yeah.
So, and you don't know what the hell connection they are to the main
and
crime
also
at all.
The man who's on 0 hours, his sister is at a food bank. Yeah. And it's all
food
bank.
So there's a lot of stuff going on in this thing. Now, I like that. I like the fact that there's those things going on. You don't know what. There's all horrible, nasty stuff going on with a boy, a young man being kind of tortured. You know, and you don't know.
Let me just say,
before we all give our verdict of what we think of it, I was amazed. Having seen episode two, I warn you now, episode two has some really nasty, awful stuff involving young characters without wanting to spoil anything, right? And I'm amazed. I think this is one of the darkest, most daring, in terms of the subject matter, mainstream ITV primetime things I've ever seen.
Really?
It's really horrendous. Yeah, because I mean, at the beginning, one of the characters, as we said, is a child abuser, a paedophile, who admitting his
he did 15 years.
Yeah, right. Now, all of that is a big theme of this series, and it gets even more kind of involved in the second episode. I have to say I was shocked.
Do you know what?
And nothing shocks me.
Do you know what I have to say about this paedophile, right? I thought it was very interesting because you don't often see on TV a paedophile who's so unrepentant.
Yeah.
And he says stuff like, you know, he's not a practicing paedophile and the fear of prison is greater than the desire to practice his sexuality and he's a victim
too.
It's
a disease.
His line is he's got it under control. He's also got a girlfriend. Who we meet in the second episode, which is very interesting. And I commend it for
It's quite bold
and brave. And I think my guess is, this is all speculation, but the fact that this Hans Rosenfeld, who's such an internationally renowned, admired writer, I think because he's so respected, he can get away with it.
Free reign.
I think if you've been a young, British, I don't think they would have got away with this stuff.
Really?
I think IT would have gone, way
so
can we put this out.
As to what's in
it gets also, quite
grim.
Also, to be fair
to him, it's that reason, but also it's because they've got a successful first series under their belt.
Emmy award-winning. Absolutely. You're right, and that as well. But the whole thing, it gets pretty unbelievably grim. But I think I'm in slightly two minds about it, because I think it's really gripping, and I love the boldness of it, and I love the dark subject matter. I think it's almost like horror, some of it, which I love good horror. But equally, some of it's really clunky. The whole thing about this millionaire guy is unbelievably clunky and obvious.
I didn't really understand that, if I'm honest. I didn't understand why it was in it.
And then there's odd moments. It's interesting that he writes it in his Scandinavian, whatever his language is, and then it's translated. And I feel some of the dialogue is a bit basic to me. So I'm nitpicking. I still really enjoy it. I think it's great.
Is this start as good as the last season?
Yeah, because it's very...
I think it's a good start, to be fair.
It's incredibly dramatic, isn't it? And a great, it's a great, horrible, nasty, eye-catchingly weird story, isn't it?
Should I watch the first season?
Yeah, you'll like it, but watch the whole of this and then go back and watch the first season. Because it's a great case. And it's serial killers, you know. It's going
your favourite subject. I love a serial killer.
I do as well. You know, going back to Invincible 7 on this film. So I really liked it, but I don't think it's like... flawless. I think it's quite heavily flawed, but I still really, really like it. What do you think, Kate, as a fan of the show?
I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a great opener, especially the opening scene. And I got, you know, these subplots.
Yeah.
They just didn't do it for me. And I was like, do you really need them? And we kind of talked to her in the interview about that. And she was like, look, just stick with it though, because these actually turn out to really be really big things and they'll develop further, which obviously they would do. But I just don't know if you needed them in the opening episode. But what I love about Marcella is her character and the fact that
she's great.
Deeply flawed. She's such, you know, there's so much depth to her. And what I enjoy is that throughout the series, you know, getting to know her more, you get to know more about her personality and her characteristics and everything she's been through as much as the actual crime. And I really enjoy that. I think that's really good.
Steph, what's your feeling in the
end? I really loved it. I was totally gripped. Anna Friel just picks such good things, doesn't she? I thought it was 5 stars. I thought it was brilliant. I really wanted to go back and watch the first one, but I'm going to watch the rest of this now you said that.
There is one really funny thing about it, I have to say, because the Nigel Planer character, this old rock star, who I feel is an amusing character, and Keith Allen, is his band that he was in is called like Swiss Coast or something. It's so funny. It's like something
Partridge.
It's like something out of Partridge or, you know, The League of Gentlemen or something. It is really quite funny, the whole idea of it. And at one point he's looking through a kind of scrapbook.
Yeah.
Thing. It's a preposterous scene. So yeah, there are moments of preposterousness, I think, in this. But I think it's fine. I think it's incredibly entertaining. I'm giving it 4 stars.
I'm giving it 4 too.
Maybe because I've never seen it before. I was just like, this is really good.
And talking about ending, she said there's a big shock at the end that would just have everyone going, no! Oh,
so how many stars are you? You're veering towards 4?
I'm going 5.
Five?
No, I'm going 5. I really, really liked it.
It is on. Marcella Series 2 begins on Monday, the 19th of February at 9 o'clock. Okay. And it will carry on being like that for the next 8 weeks.
I'll tune in.
Do. Starting on Saturday, unusually, I think.
That is an unusual day.
Yeah, for Sky Atlantic. I feel what Sky Atlantic's doing here, slightly, is climbing aboard that Saturday night BBC Four thing I talked about.
Are they?
Yeah, Saturday night is the new big night for crime drama, because the BBC puts out Hard Sun as well, and Taboo
people
they have
really
on it.
Like that Hard Sun.
I think they like it. And also, I think maybe Sky thinks, so people watch the foreign thing on BBC Four, currently your favourite.
Mm.
What's it called?
Spiral.
Maybe then after that, they'll go and turn over and watch this on Sky Atlantic, because it's high end. It's high end. See? This is Mosaic, directed by Steven Soderbergh. Do you want to assail this story? Or
I can give it a go.
It's quite,
okay.
Go for it.
So,
GFI.
Olivia Lake is a very successful children's author, okay? Played by the wonderful Sharon Stone, who I have to say, I didn't actually think did anything now, apart from like go on yachts and party and stuff. You see her in Cannes, you see her at various places. Lots of do-gooding. Sorry, not do-gooding, because you always
charity work.
Charity work. Lots of good charity work.
You don't see her in many new films. You're right.
But you don't, no. Anyway, welcome back. So she plays, she's a mature lady, and as she is in real life, she plays a children's author.
Woman of a certain age?
She's a woman of a certain age.
That phrase which Helen Mirren hates, by the way.
Oh,
don't ever say that to Helen Mirren.
Oh, God, if hell's listen, we have to apologise, because she won't leave a review.
Just, Mirren.
Yeah.
Anyway, so she's a children's book author. The whole thing starts with a kind of a flash forward to Garrett Hedlund, the very attractive Garrett Hedlund, being confronted by a police officer about the fact that there's been a murder.
As they say, Midsummer Murders.
There's been a murder. There's been a murder, and he's confronted with all the evidence. It's actually a really amazing start. He does this whole kind of monologue of this happened, then this happened, then this happened, and what are we going to have to do about this then? And then Garrett Hedlund says, I don't know. What are we going to do? Anyway, then you go back 4 years.
I love this reenactment.
I know, it's like being, it's like watching it right then.
I aim to please. Then we go back 4 years to find out how Olivia Lake and Garrett Hedlund's character meet. And he is kind of an aspiring artist, and she decides to take him under her wing. But she decides,
which has nothing to do with him being completely fit.
Yeah, him being sexy. She is kind of like, I don't want to call her, she's not desperate, but she wants company.
She's lonely.
She's lonely.
And also, she's just very, she's very successful, confident
woman.
She's in
a vast big house.
Well, see, I think she's
in
not,
Utah, yeah. Small town Utah, she's lonely. Yeah.
But
she's in need of
but
company.
I don't think she's confident. I think she's quite insecure.
Yeah, oh, I agree.
Okay.
Yeah,
so anyway, this guy moves in. He's got a girlfriend, by the way.
Well, she moves him in. Sorry to interrupt your otherwise very glowing, comprehensive reenactment. Yeah.
Hold on a minute, boy, because I was about to say she moves him into a barn.
Well, yes.
So on the property.
But why? Because he's a would-be artist.
Yes.
So the whole excuse is she thinks he can use her thing as a studio.
I know. Well, yes. As I said previously.
Did you say that?
He was a would-be artist.
Is that a mislisten from me?
All I ask
a
mishearing. Is you to listen every single word I say.
Oh, do apologise.
Okay.
Apologia.
So he's moved in and she's going to get him to help around the house and stuff. She's also got this little friend.
Handyman.
Who I'm... Is the little friend Pee-wee Herman?
Yes.
I'm really...
Paul Rubens.
This is
what
very
a
confusing
legend.
To me. Okay, so Pee-wee Herman, if you know who that was a strange character.
Paul Rubens.
Yeah, but he's also in this. And then it comes to light that there's some kind of... What is it? It's like
Steph waving her hands around. I don't know.
But I don't know how to describe it. On her land.
Oh, yeah, they're all after her land.
Yeah, they're all after her land. Anyway, and then there's a... Go on, okay.
No, go on.
And there's some nasty bastards who are trying to get her to sell this land, okay?
Including her neighbour.
And so then a con artist enters her life.
Con artist.
Yeah.
Who tries to... Who's been employed by the neighbours to try and convince her to sell the land.
He's preying upon her and her insecurities.
So effectively, there's the Sharon Stone character is being, she's surrounded by these men, really, so far, mostly, who are all want something from her, don't they?
That
all are being helped by her. And so I think it's all being lined up. I mean, we don't see this yet, but I feel it's all being lined up that she's going to be killed by one of them, maybe more of them together. And it's all about who is doing it and what's happening and how it's playing out. Do you know, very interestingly, this is an HBO series in America. I think it went out on consecutive nights there. Sky, for some reason, slightly annoyingly, are showing it on a week-by-week basis, unless they put it all out on as a box set, but they haven't announced that yet. So it was like a drama event in America. And they also released an app in which you could play along with it and kind of like look at the story from the different points of view of the different characters. Yeah, and I don't think they're doing
that
here. No, well, I've checked. I couldn't find it on the... And I haven't... Yeah, Sky hasn't mentioned any of their press materials or anything. So I think that's a bit... So I think part of the whole idea of it from Steven Soderbergh and the guy who wrote it is... You know,
it's a real
to make
experience.
It very modern, you know, multimedia experience. Yeah,
I'd love to know how successful that was.
Yeah,
because in theory it sounds really great, but when you're watching,
well, I was reading reviews that people seem to enjoy it. People
seem
to they thought it was quite a successful thing. So what's interesting, I thought, is that interesting about this is that on one that everything we've said about it, it feels quite like a fairly formulaic crime thriller in a way. There's all these suspects and there's this victim. And it's being told in flashback, but it's in the visual, the direction. It's so it's so Steven Soderbergh. You know how he fluid scenes, and it's all like it looks great. Okay, shrug.
Do you know what? I've missed a really important point. The reason it's called Mosaic is because she has this children's art center called Mosaic.
Yeah. Good point. I mean, it's,
Apologia.
Yeah, fine. You could have said that, and I wouldn't have minded if you had or hadn't.
Fine, covered thanks,
that
Boyd.
Element, but that's good. I think, but it really does. I think because you know, often you say about these things, everything. You know, most dramas these days are cinematic. You know, people try and Marcello.
This is a bit different, though.
This is a bit different, doesn't it? It looks different. It looks. It's very. I think it's shot in a very almost like documentary yet slick, very interesting style. Almost like sometimes. He's like focusing on the characters in the foreground,
but
and everything's blurry in the background.
But also, sometimes the characters are completely blurred.
Yeah,
and it sort of sets up some scenes where the characters are really far away.
Yeah.
Which sounds ridiculous, but they're the only thing in the scene. Like there's a particular scene where Sharon Stone's sitting on a kitchen counter, and you almost can't see that it's her until he gets closer.
Yeah. So I think that's the interesting thing for me. the actual plot feels formulaic, but the way it looks and the way it's directed is fascinating. And I'm wondering where that's all going to lead. And isn't it interesting that, because of course, in Basic Instinct, her most famous film, she played an author. She played an author of crime novels. Ooh. And I do feel he's cast her in a deliberate way. Now she's an author of children's novels.
Yeah.
She was massively wealthy, living in a huge house in Basic Instinct. In this, she's living in a huge house. Mm. It's almost like commenting on her and her career and her most famous film. And I love all that. I think it's fascinating.
She's really, really
good
in this.
She's brilliant. I mean, remember Casino? She was absolutely phenomenal in Casino. So, because people think of her as just the woman who opened her legs in that scene.
I know.
Unfairly in Basic Instinct. Okay, I'm sure you think of her in that way, always.
I mean, that's what I was just thinking of.
Yeah, but really, she's absolutely brilliant. So I'm mainly loving it for her. Garrett Hedlund's good. He's hunky, isn't he, and all that.
He's good, but he's not. I mean, I haven't only watched the first one. He's good, but this is about Sharon Stone.
Oh, yeah, totally.
This is absolutely about her. Yeah.
It's good to, you know, have her on TV, isn't it? And also to representing an older lady. I like the fact, this is quite a basic thing to say, but I like the fact that she hasn't filled, like, her face moves, you know, because, like.
Yeah, it's real. Oh, yeah, she doesn't look like she's having any work done. No,
exactly.
No
and
work.
I like that, you know.
Oh my God, maybe, really
she's having, maybe she's having a kid naissance.
Yeah, this is her kid naissance. Oh. But it'll be a stone. No, it'll be a stone naissance.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what she's having.
It's a stone revival.
Oh,
yeah.
I
hope so. She's fantastic. Yeah, she does look great, but totally of her age. Yeah.
Yeah, but I like that.
Yeah.
And
I'm agreeing. I'm in full agreement. Okay.
Roger. I don't know. I don't know how convinced I was that she's some, you know, kind of tortured artist, though.
Not tortured. Did you say tortured?
No, I did not say tortured. I don't think she's tortured. I think
she's got issues.
She's got issues, but I think it's because,
I don't know.
She's just. I think she's just insecure because she.
Yeah, insecure.
Had a boyfriend
that's the
ages.
Word. I think she's insecure. Yeah, I think that's true.
She's in desperate
they're definitely
need of male company. That's what she is.
But they're definitely old company. They're definitely. She's got a gay best friend played by Paul Rubens, Pee Wee Herman, who is brilliant. Steals the show.
He is good.
He's hilarious as a kind of bitchy, you know, slightly stereotyped figure, but. You know, you meet people like that, and he's very funny.
Yeah.
I'm sure the character will be deepened as it goes on. He's great, and you know, she wants company. She's in this huge effing house, and her life's pretty empty. So she wants. I think that works very well.
I enjoyed it, but maybe it's ironic because it's set in a snowy town in Utah. It was just the opening episode was just went out. It was quite glacial speed. I didn't find it pacey enough.
Oh really?
Mm. Glacial. She's used the word glacial.
Glacial. Too
That's
much
pretty
snow
slow.
For you. Yeah.
It's not fast.
Mm, it's not.
I didn't notice the glaciality.
No, I didn't either.
No.
I thought it was really beautifully shot.
Beautifully
I liked
shot.
It.
I am going to go out on a limb.
Go
and
on.
I'm going to give it 4.5 stars. Not that much of a limb.
I'm going to say 4.
Okay.
I'm going to give it 4. It's a 4 for me.
Mosaic. Begins on Sky Atlantic and indeed Now TV next Saturday, the 17th of February at 10 p.m. I don't know why I'm speaking like that.
It's very effective.
Is it?
Yes.
Finally, in our occasional Oscar slot,
ding!
Lady Bird has been nominated for 5 Oscars, including Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actress, and Best Supporting Actress. That's a pretty good.
Is Laurie Metcalf the supporting actress in this?
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely. So, Greta Gerwig, we've all seen Greta Gerwig in loads of rather good, I feel, American indie. She's like quirky.
I just saw her in, what's the one she's in with Ethan Hawke?
Yeah, it's very good, that one with Ethan Hawke.
Oh,
name,
what
I
is
can't
it called?
Remember. I don't know. Someone look it up, for God's sake.
It's a Google, I'll do it.
It's a Google.
Ethan Hawke she's in, and she plays.
Yes.
She's not in Ethan Hawke.
Well, she's actually.
Steady. Oh, is she?
Yeah.
Steady on.
Right, put the explicit sign on this podcast, John.
Anyway, Greta Gerwig is an absolute brilliant actress and has been in loads of these great indie films, which Kay is about to tell us what the name of one of them. And this is her first job writing and directing, and it is based indeed on her own life partly, kind of growing up in a particular town in California. She had an interesting relationship with her mum, so it's partly about going back to her kind of days when she was about to go to college. The very first scene, she's having a row with her mum in the car and they're looking at possible where she's going to go to college, and she gets so annoyed with, this is not a spoiler because it is the first scene, she gets so annoyed with her mum, played by, so Saoirse Ronan, sorry, is the main character, the teenager, her mum played by Laurie Metcalf, she gets
Aunt
so
Jackie,
annoyed with her.
Aunt Jackie from Roseanne.
From Roseanne, indeed, that she opens the door of the car and jumps out. Which I thought was brilliant, and ends up being injured for the rest of the film.
It sums up her personality in like one action.
It does. So she's a maverick creator. She calls herself Lady Bird. That's her own nickname that she's given herself. So it's
her
kind
name
of,
is Christine.
Yeah. So I think that gives you an idea that she's a maverick creative figure. She has a very tense relationship with her mother. It does kind of is unfairly harsh with her. I feel that's quite clear.
Classic mother-daughter relationship.
It's a classic, yes. But also a classic coming of age kind of tale, isn't it?
So she's got a best friend who's quite a kind of also an independent spirit and is very funny.
She meets
these two guys, young guys. Yeah. One of them played by Lucas Hedges from Manchester by the Sea. And then another played by Timothée Chalamet from Call Me By Your Name. These are kind of romantic options, if you like. So it's like, won't she go with one of these?
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's kind of like, it's fairly, I would say, plot light. It's a character study, isn't it? As much as anything.
It's absolutely about mother-daughter relationship and
best friend relationship.
Every single relationship that you can have at this really kind of pivotal time in your life when you, especially in America, where because America is so vast that when you go to college in America, you literally can go 11 hours away from your family to a completely different coast. So she's on the West Coast and she wants to get to the East Coast. She wants to get to New York to be as far away from this life that she has. It's all about coming to terms with what your relationships are, where you live, where you come from. But like you say, plot light, but it's so beautifully done. And Saoirse Ronan is such an incredible actress. I can't think of a film that she's done where she hasn't been brilliant in this, and she is fantastic in this. I loved her in Brooklyn. If you last year's Oscars, she was amazing. And
it was a couple of years ago.
Was it a couple of years ago, Brooklyn?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought it was last year.
No.
Where does time
flies
go?
In Oscar land.
In this
really,
podcast room.
It really does. I think she, Laurie Metcalf, if she doesn't get Best Supporting Actress, she plays the role of, because the mother is such a hard role to play because she's conflicted. She loves her daughter, but she plays it in the way that I imagine lots of mothers feel, in that she really loves her child. And there's a brilliant scene where her daughter, Ladybird, says to her, I just really wish you liked me. Mm. And the mother doesn't.
A crucial difference.
The mother doesn't immediately. She says, "Of course I love you." And she says, "Of course I love you." She's like, "Yeah, but I really wish you liked me." And then she doesn't answer her.
No.
And you can see like her mother is pained
all the way
through.
It's difficult to watch, actually.
It is.
Don't you think?
It is difficult to watch, but it's so authentic. Is I think the best word for this. It's such an authentic portrayal of a mother-daughter relationship. I really loved it.
I hated it.
No.
I loved it. Yeah, I mean, it's just everything about this film is beautiful and completely heartbreaking and a must watch.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's
wonderful.
Kate's
heart's been broken.
I found it very, like, moving. For all the reasons that you've stated, I'm not going to repeat.
Wow.
Did you like it, Lloyd?
You know what this means, don't you? Kate thinks we've gone on too long.
No.
No, I'm
But
joking.
As soon as I finished it, I just thought...
Yeah.
It was so thought-provoking. Plus, I just like, immediately, I was like, I want to watch that again.
Mm. Yeah, you can watch
it again. And there's no higher recommendation from me than saying, Pogs, go to the cinema and watch this.
It is. Yeah, I agree. It is.
Don't wait for DVD.
Don't wait for the DVD. We definitely shouldn't be waiting for the DVD for this, nor Phantom Thread, which is the one you recommended people.
I mean,
no,
watch that on
fourth
DVD.
Time. Watched it full time again the other day.
Did you?
Yeah.
Fourth time?
God, you're obsessive.
Yeah. One of the best films of the year, Lady Bird, is going to be. That was a brilliant bit of syntax, that was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yoda. One of the best films of the year.
Lady Bird is going to be.
It is. Everything about it is perfect. And I think the very interesting thing about it at the moment, I feel the two favourites to win Best Picture are Lady Bird.
Three Billboards.
No.
No?
No.
What?
Get Out. Get Out.
Shut up.
Yeah. You know
shut
why?
Up and Get Out.
I won't shut up. Because
oh,
as
no.
we as we discussed when we reviewed Three Billboards, you can go back to that and re-listen. There's controversy still about that because there's this mini backlash about
but
the race.
Still winning all the awards,
yeah, the British awards and other awards, but not the. So the thing about the Oscars is because it's a preferential ballot. I'm not going to go into it. So among the however many loads of films nominated, it's in the end it's the film that has the least number of haters. That wins. It's very interesting.
That's depressing.
Actually, that is really interesting. Yeah. So, sorry, explain that to me again.
It's a preferential ballot. So you actually list in order films that you like, right?
Right. Mm.
And so a film
like
that,
1 to 5.
1 to 5.
Okay.
So a film that a lot of people hate won't get any of those votes. But the films that generally have a lot of support and people, it may not be their number one, but this kind of film, I think the two films for me that will have the most general support and won't have a love-hate it thing about them. Oh, Lady Bird
that
and Get Out.
That is absolutely fascinating.
Yeah.
So you're saying that if you've got a Marmite film that some people absolutely rave about,
exactly.
It's not got...
So last year, La La Land was the favourite, but I feel La La Land is a Marmite film. I find it completely overrated and annoying because it's, you know...
Some people hate musicals.
I'm going to gloss over you saying that.
But whereas Moonlight, which won famously, in the end.
Everyone generally accepts.
Everyone can appreciate it's reached
the
level
has
of
literally taken on a whole
new
meaning.
It's different.
To me
it
now.
Is different now. Yeah. So
it's so weird. It's,
yeah. So I think Lady Bird could well win Best Picture because it's you just watch
everyone
it.
Everyone will like
all
it.
All those thousands of people who get sent the screener of it to watch, all these, you know, Academy voters, they're all gonna be like, oh, that's great, that's great. And I think it could win. So,
oh
but anyway,
God, so do I
love it.
Fingers crossed.
I think Greta Gerwig has proven herself to be
I hope she wins Best
genius.
Director. Is she up for Best Director?
Yeah, she's up for Best Director.
She'll really
be the, one of the very, very few female Best Director nominees ever.
I really hope she wins.
Saoirse Ronan, brilliant. Laurie Metcalf, incredible. Always loved her in Roseanne.
Laurie Metcalf has not had enough awards in her life.
No.
I really feel
it was
like...
The Eternal Affairs. Remember she was in that with Thingy Bob from American Gigolo. Richard Gere.
Oh.
Richard Gere and Laurie Metcalf are the Detective Giro in that film. Internal Affairs is one to watch on the iTunes. Find it on the iTunes. Forget about Shirley Valentine.
Yeah.
It's really good and she's great in it. And originally the part was supposed to be a man and the director just went, oh no, I'm going to get Laurie Metcalf to do it. And she did it. She's great in it.
Well, I love her as Sheldon's mum in The Big Bang Theory.
Fantastic.
She is great.
So it's a 5-star from me.
It's a 5-star, don't wait for DVD from me.
No, it is a 5-star. It'll make you, it's lovely and beautiful, but also sad. Isn't it?
Uplifting. Lady Bird is on in cinemas from next Friday, the 16th of February.
Is
or
it
even this
Lady,
Friday.
Is it not Lady Bird? It
two
is
words.
Lady
Bird.
Bird.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
God, you are blowing my mind.
I know.
Today,
it's a mind blow. Finally, it's that time.
Question time.
In honour of Steven Soderbergh's venture into television, crime drama, I thought we'd ask, what's your favourite Steven Soderbergh thing? It can be anything. It can be that other TV series you didn't watch, you've never heard of, that I mentioned called The Nick. Steph, what is your favourite Soderbergh film? Or even TV thing?
Well,
even though you've only seen one TV thing.
I've only seen one TV thing, because that's all he's allowed me to see.
Yeah.
I think it's going to have to be Julia Roberts' Oscar-winning performance in Erin Brockovich.
Good point.
Excellent point.
Well
made. Well
made
by me.
Kay, let me remind you, this man has directed Brockovich, Sex, Lies and Videotape, Behind the Candelabra, remember?
Oh, that's a great film. Oh, did he direct that?
Yes.
Oh, I didn't realise that.
Out of Bloody Sight with George Clooney.
Oh,
and Lopez.
Jennifer
Lopez
is Lopez one
is
good
best
film.
Performance. Best performance. Solaris
one
with Clooney.
One good film.
The Limey, King of the Hill.
Oh, did he do Michael Clayton?
Ocean's 11, Ocean's 12, Ocean's 13.
He loves Clooney.
Traffic. He loves Clooney. All of those films. Magic Mike. The original Magic Mike.
That's
produced
probably
the sequel.
The best of
Magic
the
Mike's
Magic
really
Mikes.
Good. He produced, he directed, sorry, Shay, a film about Shay Guevara. All of these things. Kay, what are you going for?
She's doing a doodle right now.
I'll go for Magic Mike.
Good choice.
And what I've decided now is when I don't like the question.
Right, you're going to just.
I'm going to have an alternative question.
What's your alternative question?
What's my favourite soda?
Okay, what is your favourite
and
soda?
I'm going to go for Coca-Cola.
Which
especially
type
in the
of
glass,
Coca-Cola?
In the glass bottle.
It tastes different, doesn't it?
Yeah, or in holiday, on holiday with a lots of ice and a slice of lime.
Well, let me put this to you. Mm. What is your favourite burger? So we'll have your favourite soda and your favourite burger.
Then
see
that
what
would
I've
be
done
that
there?
Would be a fillet fish, you know that stuff.
Okay.
Yeah.
Boyd.
Good work. Well done. I'm impressed.
You will need to answer the three questions. Your favourite Steven Soderbergh, your favourite soda and your favourite burger.
No,
favourite soda is a Fanta
hours.
Orange.
Fanta Orange. Yeah. Oh, I love Fanta Limon.
Oh, okay. Yeah. My favourite burger is the veggie burger in Grubbs in Brighton.
Ooh, yeah. That's a very specific.
Yeah. When I went to university there, it was absolute must. It was like a nightly event. And it's still there, Grubbs in Brighton.
How many burgers are we consuming?
Veggie burger, it's great.
What makes it so
it's
nice?
It's just the perfect consistency for a veggie burger. You know, some veggie burgers can be. Kay's got a head in her hands because this has taken so long.
Well, it's her fault.
Yeah,
happened.
She brought it up. It's her fault. It's just got perfect consistency. It doesn't taste like meat.
Right.
It's not like. It's vegetables, probably but it's really good.
What is it a brioche bun? Because that always makes a difference for me.
I don't think it is a brioche bun. No, maybe it is these days. I mean, it's years since I've had one. But I know it's still there. Okay. And more importantly, my favourite Steven Soderbergh. So I'm going to shock you here.
Oh, God.
Because I love Soderbergh. I think he's an absolute genius. And I love... I even love the bad Middle Oceans film, which is really self-indulgent.
No one likes that.
No
one likes
that.
The Catherine Zeta-Jones one.
I like
no one
it.
Likes that.
I do.
Oh, good
I do.
God.
But my favourite of his films is one of his little-known films, I think, one of his lesser-known films, Side Effects. Have you seen Side Effects?
So who's in it?
Rooney Mara, Channing Tatum.
Yes, I have seen
Jude
that. That
Law.
Is a brilliant film.
Oh, my God, you've shouted.
That is an absolutely brilliant
film. It's a brilliant film. It's a Hitchcockian thriller about prescription drugs.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's mind-bending. It's got a brilliant twist. More than one twist, really.
Yeah, much more than one
and
twist.
And it's brilliantly intense. And do you know what? And I think it also is the thing that he's done that's most similar to this TV series. I think it's got
such
a similar
tone
to it.
You should watch that, Pogs. It's a brilliant film.
Yeah, so I absolutely love Side Effects. And on that...
Isn't Catherine Zeta-Jones in that film
as well? Semi-bombshell. I think she is, yeah. I think she is as well, yeah.
Is she? Yeah.
There, we have to say, on that semi-bombshell, we have to say goodbye because we've taken way too long. Kay's practically out of here. She's got a coat on. She's halfway to India.
No one's asked me what my favourite soda and burger is.
Oh, my God. I mean, Kay's...
Okay, quickly, halloumi
the
burger...
The true crime is going to happen.
And soda, I like Cherryade.
Ooh, Cherryade. Gross. Gross.
Okay.
Steph and I will be back next week. Kay's off. She's going to be off to India. Johnny Boy is going to sit in.
Yes.
JD in the hot seat.
Great few
What
weeks.
Can we expect from you, Johnny?
I think podcast recommendations.
Just a shrug.
Throwing
his hands up in the
it was
air.
A shrug. We're going to miss Kay. We will do a satellite link up.
We will.
If her in
No,
Bombay.
So while I'm off, I set you the target of getting at least 30 reviews, okay? So I'm now setting a sub test.
Done and done.
No.
Thanks, Steph.
It's a no from me. Anyway, it is a goodbye from me. I'll see you next week, but not Kay.
It's a bye from me. Have a lovely holiday, Kay. It's a goodbye from me.